With apologies to the people who were here this morning, I'm going to repeat again some of the comments I made this morning so that people are aware of how the hearing process will work and give you a little bit of background. And so let me just start by saying good afternoon and thanks for coming to this public hearing. And for those of you who are not aware of this, there are going to be three hearings overall. There's one here today. There's another one going on at the same time in Chicago, and a third one on Thursday in Atlanta. And the hearings, of course, are taking comment on the proposed emission standards that we issued a few weeks ago to control mercury and other toxics from coal and oil-fired power plants. I'm Rob Brenner, and I'm the director of EPA's Office of Policy Analysis and Review, which is part of the Office of Air and Radiation. I'll be chairing the hearing. And the other people, my colleagues on the panel here, are Kathleen Cox, who's the Associate Director for Permits and Air Toxics in our regional office here in Philadelphia, Paul Versace from our Office of General Counsel, and Kevin Culligan, who's an Associate Division Director with our Office of Air Quality Planning and Standards, which is in North Carolina. Back in March, we proposed these mercury and air toxic standards for coal and oil-fired power plants, and with the goal of significantly reducing emissions of toxic air pollutants. These are also known as hazardous air pollutants, and they're either known or, in some cases, suspected of causing cancer and other serious health effects. We've also proposed to revise another set of Clean Air Act standards at the same time, which are known as the New Source Performance Standards, and those reduce the emissions of particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, and nitrogen oxides from new coal and oil-fired plants. Power plants emit mercury, arsenic, chromium, nickel, organic air toxics, acid gases, and a series of other harmful air pollutants. They are the largest domestic source of mercury emissions to the nation's air. And once mercury from the air reaches water, microorganisms can change it to methylmercury, which is a very toxic form that builds up in fish. And people are primarily exposed to mercury by eating contaminated fish, and it's especially dangerous for children's developing brains, which are susceptible to damage from this type of exposure. And the effects include reductions in their IQ and in their ability to learn. So our estimates are that by 2016, if these proposed standards were to be put into place, that they would prevent somewhere on the order of 7,000 to 17,000 premature deaths annually, as well as provide many, many other environmental and health benefits. When we try to quantify those benefits that we can attach values to, we get numbers on the order of $60 billion to up to $140 billion annually every year starting in 2016 and ramping up between now and then. And although the costs are significant, this regulation, if it was issued as we proposed it, would cost on the order of $10.9 billion per year compared to the $60 to $140 billion. The costs are small relative to the benefits. We also found that implementing these standards would create some very good jobs for American workers who would be building, installing, and operating the equipment to reduce these health-threatening emissions. Since proposing the rule, we've updated some of the data that we use for developing the rule as we began to hear comments from groups on the outside that looked at the data we'd used and in developing the proposal. So we issued an update last week which corrects a calculation error that affected a small amount of the data we used for the proposal. And it is not going to have much of an effect at all in terms of the types of pollution controls that would be necessary to comply with the rule. And it's certainly not going to change the kind of very large benefits that I just spoke about. So we've made that corrected data available for public review on our website, And we also will have it in the docket that's assigned for the rulemaking. So right now, there are no existing federal requirements for power plants to limit their emissions of toxic air pollutants like mercury and arsenic and metals. The previous administration, the Bush administration, finalized a rule to cut mercury pollution from power plants, but the D.C. Circuit Court in Washington struck down the rule as illegal and required EPA to develop standards that follow the law and the science in order to protect human health and the environment. So today, we're going to be taking oral comments on all aspects of that proposed rule that we have now developed in response to that court decision. And there are going to be written transcripts for all three hearings that I just mentioned that will be available as part of the official record for the rule. And we will consider all of the comments that are in those transcripts as we move forward to complete the final rule, which is under a court deadline. It will be done by November of this year. And we will also be accepting additional written comments for the proposed rule until July 5th of this year. So if, as a result of this discussion, there are additional comments you want to submit, put them in written form and submit them to us. And as I said, we will be taking them until the first week of July, July 5th. There's a handout in the registration area where you came in that can provide you with much more detailed information for how you can go about submitting those written comments, and you can do it either by mail or by fax or electronically. So just a couple words about the procedures for this afternoon's part of the hearing. I'm going to call the scheduled speakers to the microphone in pairs, and when it's your turn to come up to speak, if you would state your name and your affiliation before you begin your testimony, and it would also be helpful to our court reporter if you could also spell your name so that he gets it right in the transcript. And what we're asking, in order to be fair to everybody, we have a full slate of people scheduled to testify this afternoon. So in fairness, if you would limit your testimony to 5 minutes each, and if you could stay at the microphone until both speakers in a pair have finished, there will be occasionally some questions from the panel to clarify or follow up on some of the issues that you you may have raised. After you finish the testimony, let me just say this then, that if in addition to the transcript, you would also like the full text of what you provided us to be included in the docket, then just give us a copy of your written comments. You can either give it to our staff or at the registration table, or you can give it to Paul here, and we will ensure that it gets into the docket. We have a timekeeping system on for the hearing that has a series of green, yellow, and red lights. And what will happen is when you begin to speak, the green light will come on. That marks the 5 minute point, and then the yellow light will signal that you have 2 minutes left, that you're 3 minutes into the testimony and have 2 minutes left. And when the red light comes on, 5 minutes has passed, and I'm going to ask you to try to wrap up the testimony as quickly as you can. So the hearing began this morning. It's going to continue until 8 or later if necessary tonight, depending on the number of speakers that we have. We're going to have a dinner break that will go from 5 tonight until 6:30, and then we're going to try to start promptly again at 6:30, because we do want to accommodate everyone who wants to comment, and if in order to do that we need to go later than 8 o'clock, we will, but we hope not to go too much later than 8 o'clock. But we do want to accommodate those people who need to be at work during the day and wanted to have an opportunity to testify on this rule after work. So although we don't have a number of identified spots available for people, additional people to testify, if you have not registered, please do so, and we will do our best to work you into this afternoon's session and give you an opportunity to provide us with your comments, and you can sign up at the registration table outside to do that. For those who did register to testify, we've done the best we can to enable you to speak as close as possible to the time slot that you requested. You may need to be a bit patient because, as I said, we are fortunately full up on speakers, but we'll try to keep the adjustments in order to accommodate everybody keep the adjustments as small as possible. So thanks again to everybody for coming here today to participate, and we will go ahead and get started. I'm going to call up the first two witnesses. We have Jay Butera here, who is representing 1 Million Calls for Clean Energy, and Nancy Parks, who is from the Pennsylvania chapter of the Clean Air Committee. Okay. So if you don't mind, we'll have you follow up after we have Ms. Parks speak. Okay.
Good afternoon. I am Nancy Parks. I am the chairperson for the Clean Air chairperson for the committee for the Pennsylvania chapter of the Sierra Club. We are representing over 24,000 plus members across the state. The Sierra Club has been committed to controlling air pollution in Pennsylvania for the last 31 years, especially since the promulgation and implementation of the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. We have actively participated in government hearings, advisory committees, stakeholders groups, developing options for the reduction of emitted air pollutants from mobile and stationary sources and precursor air pollutants of acidic deposition and ground-level ozone smog. We were there for Pennsylvania's extensive discussion and development of their own mercury control regulation and actively supported it, and we welcome the opportunity to testify again today about the benefits of reducing highly toxic mercury and additionally area source acid gases nationally. I myself am a research scientist with a bachelor's in human genetics and a master's in agronomy and remote sensing, and I have worked in medical research and published research in juried scientific journals. I understand the science behind the need for national regulation of mercury and air toxics, air pollution. It is, in fact, this prior training and research that has brought me to this need for the focus on the science of air pollution control. I support, and the Sierra Club supports, these EPA proposals to regulate, reduce, and clean up hazardous air pollutants under Section 112 of the Clean Air Act. Throughout today, you have heard that the public is tracking the success of EPA, and even some in the regulated utility industry who have proactively taken steps to add pollution control equipment that will already meet the new standards and regulations as proposed. Yet we know that still 44% of all U.S. coal-fired power plants still have not yet installed advanced pollution control equipment. We know that U.S. electric generating utilities, EGUs, emit 50% of all the mercury emitted in the United States, with 99% of that emitted by coal-fired power plants. Additionally, coal-fired power plants emit 50% of acid gas emissions and 25% of the toxic metal emissions here in the U.S. Pennsylvania produces a huge proportion of our national air pollution burden for mercury. We are the second largest emitter in the U.S. Heavy metal air toxics and acid gases, and our state has the moral and ethical responsibility to assist all of you in EPA in implementing and enforcing under Section 112 these new regulations, which can reduce exposure of all Pennsylvanians and those living downwind of Pennsylvania to mercury and acid gas toxic emissions. These regulations as presented are estimated to prevent 91% of the mercury that is currently released through combusted coal from ever being emitted in the future. If we can achieve that goal, we could have a really spectacular success and an achievement in a necessary government regulation to protect our most vulnerable citizens from the increasingly well-documented effects to human health. Over 600,000 women of childbearing age across the U.S. have quantities of mercury in their blood that exceeds the safe levels set by EPA and supported by the National Academy of Sciences. With as many as 17,000 persons protected from premature death, over 12,000 hospital and ER visits prevented, over 120,000 cases of aggravated asthma prevented, over 11,000 cases of acute bronchitis and 4,500 cases of chronic bronchitis prevented by the year 2016, perhaps we could now regain some of the 850,000 days of missed employee work that EPA estimates results from the poor health caused by air pollution here in the United States. I would also urge EPA to continue their research into human health effect benefits and secondary benefits of reducing air toxics and their effects on ecosystems, habitats, and visibility impairment. These are important benefits to all U.S. citizens and should receive attention and quantification where possible. Pennsylvania endured an extensive discussion process through its own investigation of its own mercury emissions and all possible methods that could be used currently to reduce those emissions. And we found reason to support the use of activated carbon injection here in Pennsylvania, with 90 to 99% reduction of mercury from coal-fired power plants using ACI. Recent research has shown that many bituminous, sub-bituminous, and lignite coal-burning facilities have all now applied ACI technology as their mercury reduction technology of choice nationally. I urge EPA to require the very best technologies available, regardless of cost, to reduce these various mercury and acid gas pollutants. It is important for EPA to require the states to keep the national technology database constantly updated, and I hope that we can continually require the best technologies to be applied to air pollution reduction activities now and throughout the future. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. The Sierra Club will be submitting technical comments from Pennsylvania by your July 5th deadline. But I also want to say that I am really impressed by the wealth of young people that I've seen coming in here today that really have begun to care about clean air, and I'm very happy to see that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Butera.
Thank you very much. This afternoon, I'm here to speak with you on behalf of the 7,500 members of 1 Million Calls for Clean Energy. This is an organization that I founded to give citizens a voice, to allow them to voice their desire for clean energy to the federal government. By way of background, there's no outside funding to this organization. It's entirely funded from my own personal pocket, and so there's no industry spin, there's no commercial agenda in what I'm saying. I'm just trying to help the country and the planet. On the screen here is the clean energy petition that 4,481 of our members have signed, and it reads this: we have joined 1 million calls for clean energy to tell you that it's time to make clean energy an urgent national priority. America wants a fast-track plan that cuts our dependence on dirty fossil fuels and puts us on a path toward clean energy future. We want green jobs, environmental solutions, and freedom from fossil fuels, and we want it right now. And I think those are the goals that this rule will help us achieve, and I want to talk to you about the connection between the air toxics ruling and clean energy in general. For the record, I will submit this petition in PDF form. It's 96 pages long, and people have signed this from every state in the United States, from Alaska to Hawaii, Maine to Florida. Just have to switch gears here one moment, please. Okay, the connection that I see between your rule and clean energy is this: dirty energy kills clean energy. When we have a market that's not fair and level, when one type of energy production can use the air and water as a free waste dumping ground, we don't have a level market. Therefore, anything that we allow to, when we allow dirty energy to continue to exist in its current form, we are subverting the possibilities of clean energy, and we are altering the economics of clean energy. And most people in the clean energy industry, what they want is a level playing field. The problem that we have right now is on our total energy mix, 85% of the energy that we're using comes from fossil fuels. I feel we need to actually reverse this pie chart so that the renewable energies and clean energies are that largest piece of the pie. And we can do that, incidentally. Stanford University just issued a very interesting study, says we could completely run the country on clean energy within 10 years with a massive effort at reasonable cost. So when they tell us that it can't be done, I don't believe it. I believe it can be done, and economically. So can energy be clean? I just want to run through a few of the options that are on the palette here. We have photovoltaics now scaled up to utility grid scale. We have solar thermal, a very interesting and economical form of producing electricity with zero emissions, another type of solar thermal. Of course, we have wind power in many forms. It's highly evolved. This is actually a personal wind turbine you can put at your house. Offshore wind, now viable. Radical new designs in wind coming along. Future wind. We have geothermal. We have hydropower. We have wave energy, ocean swell energy. So when they tell us that clean energy can't exist, when I drive the Pennsylvania Turnpike and see these bulletin boards that say the sun sets at night, well, I want to tell you about solar thermal. They're running that after the sun sets on molten salt by capturing the heat and running it for hours after sunset. So it can be done, and it really needs to be done. Fossil fuel is not limitless. This is a menu of energy options. The problem that I see is after thousands of years on Earth, mankind is still down at the bottom there using coal and oil, dirty sludge dug out of the bowels of the Earth, and we can do better than that, in my opinion. I just want to also mention a connection between what you're doing here and climate change, which I believe is the number one threat to mankind, and most scientists would also agree with that. If we can move to clean energy, we reduce the carbon footprint of energy production, and we take a giant step toward hopefully mitigating the worst effects of climate change. Taking toxins out of the air, if we tilt the planet, that's a permanent change. And so we need to be very mindful of that. And your ruling that will help to promote the viable nature of clean energy will help us address that issue as well. So I want to thank you on behalf of 1 Million Calls for Clean Energy for hearing our comments today.
Great. Thank you. We'll look forward to receiving both of your written testimonies. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, next up we have Katie Feeney from the Clean Air Council and Tyra Bryant Stevens, from the Community Asthma Prevention Program.
Just a point of clarification. My name is Katie Feeney. I do work at the Clean Air Council, but if possible, could the record reflect that I'm speaking as an individual?
Sure, absolutely. We'll do that.
Okay. Thank you. Again, my name is Katie Feeney. I would like to thank EPA for allowing me this opportunity today to speak as a young adult woman who is very concerned about pollution from coal-fired power plants. I'm 26 years old. When I was 16, I chose to become a vegetarian. Eventually, that evolved into a pesca ova lacta vegetarian, which basically means that I... it's a very fancy word, meaning that I love fish. I rely on it. I chose to do this because, as I've said, about factory farming and animal cruelty. And as such, I rely on fish for most of my iron and my protein. And I desperately need it to fuel my body, as I am anemic and, as such, have suffered from fainting spells in the past. Without meat in my diet, I want and need to eat fish. It's pretty simple. In addition to this, I do not make a lot of money. As I mentioned, I work for the Clean Air Council. I live paycheck to paycheck. While I have been advised that tuna should be avoided because it is contaminated with mercury that could harm me or the children that I hope to have someday, it is often all that I can afford. And frankly, I don't have the financial luxury to avoid it if I don't want to faint. So herein lies my outrage. Some of you may just say, just eat meat. But to me, I'd rather ask the question, why can't I eat tuna? Why can't we just eliminate mercury from the environment and from fish so I can eat tuna? As most people in this room know, tuna is delicious, especially in sushi. I recently had my hair tested working with the Sierra Club for mercury, and I received very shocking results from a laboratory in Atlanta. I was shocked to learn that my mercury levels are much higher than EPA says are safe. I clocked in at about 1.56 parts per million, meaning that there's this much mercury in my body. EPA, I believe, and I'm sorry, I didn't look this up before I left, I believe it's 1.2 parts per million is deemed the, over that is deemed the unsafe level. There are some medical professionals that I've talked to who have suggested that perhaps any amount of mercury in my blood might be unsafe for me. So, in brief, I will be very brief. I am just asking EPA today to please help protect people like me. I try very hard to live a very healthy lifestyle, and the pollution from coal-fired power plants, especially mercury pollution, is way out of my control. There's nothing I can do about it. I don't want to start eating meat. I like fish. I'd like to be able to, you know, buy tuna because it's affordable. And it just really makes me angry. It just feels really unfair that I can't, and that I have to have, you know, these financial obstacles and health obstacles, all because, you know, coal-fired power plants can't just limit the mercury and toxics they're putting into the air. It's a threat to my health. It's an obstacle for my bank account. I'm pleading with you today to protect women like me and the children we want to have by supporting a strong standard to reduce mercury and other air toxics from big coal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Tyra Bryan Stevens. I'm a pediatrician for the past 24 years in Philadelphia, practicing primary care pediatrician, and I'm the director of the Community AIDS Prevention Program at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for the past 13 years. I'm here to support the EPA's proposal to clean up hazardous air pollutants from coal-fired power plants. As a primary care pediatrician, I am concerned about the impact of toxic air pollutants on children's health. As we know, in each life stage, children may be affected by mercury and toxic air pollutants, which can cause learning difficulties, respiratory symptoms, asthma attacks, and birth defects. The most innocent and vulnerable citizens of our society, the children, should not have to breathe recognized and probable carcinogens, including formaldehyde, benzene, toluene, dioxins, and other harmful chemicals and gases. They should not have to inhale metals or metal-like substances, including lead, arsenic, nickel, and other heavy metals. And to the best of our ability, the air they breathe should not be contaminated with acid gases such as sulfur dioxide and hydrogen fluoride. They should be able to eat a healthy diet that includes fish that is not contaminated by mercury toxins. Asthma, as you know, is the most common chronic childhood disease affecting 17% of children in the inner city and nationally. And in Philadelphia, one out of four children has been diagnosed with asthma. In my work as the director and founder of Community Asthma Prevention Program, I've seen how asthma symptoms and asthma attacks affect children's ability to run, play, sleep, and learn. For the past 13 years, we have worked with over 2,000 families to try to clean up their indoor air, and we are now asking EPA to clean up their outdoor air, because these attacks can be prevented by making the air cleaner through actions such as the proposed mercury emissions and toxic air pollutant standards, especially in high-risk communities. I support the EPA proposed standards because I know that these pollutants can make breathing more difficult for my personal patients and can worsen their asthma. And as children grow up to young adults, because we all grow up, these pollutants can cause heart attacks and strokes, lung cancer and other cancers, and even kill them. In closing, I hope that this standard is also fully supported by my colleagues in the public health community and again raises our consciousness as a society that we need to continue to work towards making the air cleaner and safe for my patients, American children. By implementing these standards and others like them, you may save their lives. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Peeney, I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. In that you raised the concern over health effects from mercury and the ability to eat the foods that you need for help, and also the cost issues that you're facing, constraints on cost. And we talked some this morning about the fact that this rule could end up costing $3 a month for the average consumer of electricity, the average family. And how do you feel about that kind of trade-off? Does $3 a month seem something that's worth it, given the health benefits?
I mean, in order to answer that question, I'd have to look up the perceived health benefit costs, you know, the reduced health care costs, you know, the reduced, you know, those kind of costs to weigh them. I think, you know, coal companies make a lot more than I do, you know, I would like to see the numbers in front of me to answer that more accurately, but I think there is, you know, an external cost of our health that's not being internalized by these companies. So
okay.
That's my short on
Thank you. Thank
you. Specific answer. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for testifying. Mark Schmerling, who is testifying as a member of the public, and Candace Cheatham from the Sierra Club.
So, good afternoon. My name is Candace Cheatham, and I am a Philadelphia resident. I live in University City with my husband and our seven-month-old baby daughter, Micaiah. Micaiah is my first child, so of course she's very precious to me. And when I first got pregnant with her, my doctors gave me a bunch of pamphlets and information about the things I needed to do to have a healthy pregnancy. Some of it was useful, but some of the information was too basic. It really didn't cover a lot to have anything to do with mercury. And so I kind of did my own research. I looked up on the internet, and I was just very concerned, very precautious, making sure that I was eating the right things. And so kind of was like, okay, let me make sure that I'm getting every tidbit and I'm not missing any of the cracks or the holes of, you know, what could possibly risk my baby and my pregnancy. So before this, I was eating a whole lot of tuna and, you know, I didn't really eat any swordfish, but I was eating a lot of tuna fish and a lot of seafood in general. And I found out through the internet that I was only recommended to eat about 6 ounces of fish per week, and only certain types of fish, too. Before this, I was eating a lot more seafood, and once again, it was potentially hazardous for me. She came out healthy, thanks to the extra work I did, and I can only assume that I must have did the right thing. But it's very upsetting that despite everything I've done to protect myself and my daughter, that the coal-fired power plants are still allowed to dump the toxic mercury into the air, which is a part of the pollution in the water and the high levels of mercury that's in the fish. So I think that of course, because they have the power, that they are allowed to kind of do as they please. But maybe if we kind of continue to rally about this and have some rules established by the EPA, that the mercury and the air toxic standards would be monitored, would lower the risk of the mercury that gets into the water and causes the fish to be high in mercury, potentially hazardous for women who are pregnant, and young children. And certainly, no woman should be responsible. No unborn child should be responsible and be born with any disabilities or malformations because of it. And definitely not me, and thank God, not my daughter. So let's just continue to enforce this and get some kind of control and restriction on it. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. Yes, go ahead.
Several people have asked, have mentioned billboards. I haven't seen any. If you have pictures of them, could you submit them to the docket? But if you could submit them to the... Thank you.
Okay. Next up, testify. We have Ms. Rima Sinestavet from the Sierra Club and Robert Cooper from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Thank you. Mr. Cooper.
All right. We've heard
pull the mic a little closer to you, please. Thank you.
We've heard a lot about the mercury aspect of these proposed rules. And I wanted to speak a bit more to the other air toxics, and particularly particulate matter that this rule would cover. I'm here on behalf of athletes like myself, who on hot summer days can literally feel the air pollution. I'm also here on behalf of people like my brother, who grew up with asthma. Luckily, he was able to outgrow that But I'm also here on behalf of people who, like my mother, did not outgrow their lung disease. So my mother, despite never having smoked, was diagnosed with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. Doctors couldn't tell us what caused it, but I can tell you what makes it worse. What makes it worse are code red air quality days, which we had to be aware of growing up because they meant that my mother could not go outside for fear of having a flare-up. And if the air outside was bad enough, she might not be able to make it back upstairs without oxygen. And every one of those air pollution-induced flare-ups would leave a little bit more lung scarring, to the point where she had less than 50% of a normal person's lung capacity. So to anyone who says that reducing air pollution is too hard, I invite you to try swimming laps with your oxygen tank on the side of the pool, taking a shot of oxygen after every lap, because your doctor says that by staying in shape, you may be able to be around a little bit longer for your kids. And if anyone says that complying with these regulations are too painful, I invite you to spend a month watching your mother fade further and further into a coma because that exercise was not enough. And if anyone says that it's too expensive to reduce air pollution, I'd like to know how much my mother's life was worth. Thank you.
And thanks to both of you. Thanks for coming today. Next, we have Kristen Welker Hood from the Physicians for Social Responsibility, and we have Sarah Bucic from the Sierra Club.
And just for the record, I am a board member of the Sierra Club in Delaware, but I'm testifying as an individual today. Thank you. My name is Sarah Bucic. I'm a nurse. I'm a citizen from Delaware, and I'm also a mother. And I'm here today to support the EPA's proposal to clean up hazardous air pollutants from coal-fired power plants. I'm from Delaware, and it's often called the tailpipe of the country. This is referring to the fact that our air is polluted, yet much of the pollution is said to blow in from other parts of the country. Regardless of where it comes from, my county, Newcastle County, is not an attainment for fine particulate matter and ozone. On hot summer days, we have numerous orange days where we are advised to limit activity and stay indoors if possible. In 1990, when I was 12, Congress first told the EPA to reduce toxic air pollution. I am now 32 and a mother. My child is now breathing in unnecessary levels of arsenic, mercury, formaldehyde, and hydrogen chloride. I grew up, was pregnant, and delivered my child breathing and living in this environment. Children have not traditionally been included in the risk process by which environmental protection standards are set. When human exposure is developed or protected, it is based on adult males. Even animal models are almost always adult animals. As an advanced practice registered nurse in psychiatric mental health, I can only wonder how these toxic elements are affecting the developing fetal brain. The nervous system is the most vulnerable during embryonic, fetal, and early infant development. In the absence of a blood-brain barrier during these developmental stages, toxic exposures have unhampered access to the developing central nervous system. Mercury is a toxic substance that crosses this placental barrier, and methylmercury halts cell division in the fetal brain by binding directly to chromosomes and interfering with their ability to make copies of themselves. Methylmercury interferes with the migration of brain cells, especially in the cerebellum, the control center for posture, balance, and muscle coordination. And we know that even before conception, maternal exposures as well as paternal exposures can play a role in compromising fetal and child development. Hazardous air pollutants from coal-fired power plants include dioxins. And dioxins are stored in fatty tissues, and they accumulate in the food chain, in breast milk. In utero, and infant exposures to dioxin may account for as much as 10% of one's lifelong exposure, and rapid cell growth makes fetal tissues particularly susceptible to damage caused by these environmental exposures. Sandra Steingraber, in her book Having Faith, mentioned a study in which monitored breast milk of a U.S. mother who nursed twins for 3 years. And by the time of weaning, the mother had lowered her own body burden of dioxin by 69%, which is to say that by breastfeeding, she delivered each of her children a third of her own lifetime exposure to dioxin. These are unacceptable realities. Mothers should not have to worry if their air or water is safe or if their own breast milk contains toxicants. Control technologies to meet the new coal plant requirements to clean up pollutants currently exist. Many Georgia power plants, like the Hammond plant in Rome, use them already. And the patients I treat need to have cleaner air that is free from toxic air pollutants. This should have ended 20 years ago. My patients who face many uphill climbs do not need to breathe in recognized and probable carcinogens, including formaldehyde, benzene, toluene dioxins, and furans. They should not have to inhale lead, arsenic, or nickel, and they don't need to eat fish filled with mercury. These emissions can make breathing more difficult. It can worsen asthma, COPD, bronchitis, and lung diseases. These pollutants can cause heart attacks, strokes, lung cancer, birth defects, and even kill my patients. In this economy, I ask you to consider that while you think of jobs, you think about what is necessary for people to keep those jobs, their own health. Think about how these proposed regulations and how 850,000 days per year of missed work could be avoided. I beg you as a mother, a young adult cancer survivor, and a health practitioner to think about 17,000 lives which can be saved with these regulations. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Kristen Welker-Hood, and I am the director of the Environmental Health Program at Physicians for Social Responsibility's national office in D.C. As a nurse and as an environmental health scientist, I am heartened and grateful to witness the release of such a health protective standard that will greatly diminish the air emissions of hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. Raised in the Philadelphia area, I worked for years in the city as a community health nurse. The harmful effects of soot and air toxics had devastating effects on the fragile health of my patients with heart disease, asthma and other respiratory ailments, and cancer. On days in which outdoor air quality was poor, my patients with lung disease were chained to their 20-foot oxygen tubing for life support. They aimed to just get through the day. My patients with asthma had more frequent attacks, required their rescue inhalers repeatedly, and too often needed to be rushed to the hospital when I was unable to stabilize them at home. Those suffering from heart disease were confined to reduced activity and feared that if they did not, their crushing pain in their chest would return and perhaps they would not survive another heart attack. As a cancer nurse, I sought to ease the pain and suffering of my patients as they and their families struggled to come to terms with their debilitating illness, all the while never knowing why they had become sick. This is what air pollution does to people. This is what coal power plant pollution does to people. The emissions from coal and oil-fired power plants contain 84 of the 187 hazardous air pollutants identified by the EPA to pose the threat to human health and the environment and are regulated under the HAPs in the Clean Air Act. These pollutants include carcinogens like arsenic, hexavalent chromium, benzene, and dioxin, neurotoxins like mercury and lead, and non-mercury metals and acid gases that help form fine particulates that increase asthma attacks, lead to premature deaths from cardiovascular disease, stroke, and cancer. Coal-fired power plants release 386,000 tons of air toxics every year, accounting for 40% of all of the hazardous air pollutants spewed from point sources that we are forced to breathe. A recent EPA national scale air toxic assessment determined that in many regions of the country, breathing air toxics from outdoor sources over a lifetime exposure contributes to nearly 30% of the overall average cancer risk. This increased cancer risk is unacceptable. Controlling hazardous air pollutants from coal-fired power plants will make significant strides in lowering the lifetime cancer risks. Hazardous air pollutants released from coal-fired power plants influence the environmental quality in local and regional and also on a global scale. Communities most heavily affected by certain air toxics, such as acid gases and mercury, are those nearest to the power plant. However, acid gases form sulfur dioxide and fine particulates in the atmosphere. Sulfur dioxides react with atmospheric gases to produce fine particulates. Metals, dioxins, and other hazardous air pollutants emitted from power plants adhere to these fine particulates and can travel great distances from the coal plant, impacting the health of people hundreds, even thousands of miles away. Coal-fired power plants are the predominant source of acid gases like hydrochloric acid, accounting for 76% of the air toxic released into the atmosphere. The hazardous air pollutant standard for the coal and oil-fired power plant will cut mercury emissions by 91%, emissions for acid gases by 91%, and sulfur dioxide emissions by 53%. It would eliminate 100,000 tons of particulate pollution. The EPA estimates the proposed mercury and air toxic standards would avoid 17,000 premature deaths, 11,000 heart attacks, 12,000 hospital and emergency room visits, 120,000 asthma attacks every year nationwide. While not estimated, the reductions of carcinogens released into the air from these power plants will have profound reductions in new air toxics-related cancer cases. In closing, Physicians for Social Responsibility wishes to show a deep appreciation and support for the EPA for proposing this long overdue clean air standard that will safeguard the health of our nation's communities now exposed to unregulated air toxic pollution from power plants. We encourage the EPA to hold firm to its ground and to move forward with the strongest air toxics controls possible to defend public health and to protect people across the lifespan from toxic mercury, carcinogens like arsenic, and dangerous particulates. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you. Next, we have Gretchen Dahlkemper Alfonso testifying as an individual, and Judith Facoretta, also testifying as an individual member of the public.
Good afternoon. My name is Gretchen Dahlkemper Alfonso, and as a mother of two kids under the age of two, I am here today because I'm concerned about the very real threat that mercury poses to the health of my children, especially to the healthy development of my children before birth. When it comes to protecting my children and taking precautions on their behalf, I do not ignore the facts. It makes me angry that, despite my best efforts at living a healthy lifestyle, my body is being invaded by toxins from all angles. The most disturbing fact is that coal and oil-fired plants release more than 386,000 tons of 84 hazardous pollutants into the atmosphere each year. Many of these pollutants are damaging to the health of my family, but I am particularly concerned with the dangerous amounts of mercury that these coal-fired power plants release into our air and water and into the bodies of my children. High blood levels of methylmercury in unborn babies and children are extremely dangerous. Exposures before birth are of special concern because the developing fetus is highly vulnerable to the effects of toxic chemicals. The fetus develops quickly in the womb, and that development is easily derailed by toxic chemicals. Mercury can harm the nervous system and interfere with the development of a growing child's brain. Impacts on cognitive thinking, memory, attention, language, and fine motor and visual spatial skills have been seen in children exposed to methylmercury in the womb. The scary fact is that, according to research conducted by EPA scientists, 1 in 12, and it may be as high as 1 in 6, women of childbearing age, my age, has enough mercury in her body to put her unborn child at risk. This alarming statistic is a serious health issue that threatens our health and that of our children and future children. As a mother, I feel that it is important for me to speak up today and encourage the EPA to enact new standards that will help reduce the amount of mercury pollution being put into our environment. As a mother, I am worried about the constant threat our children face from pollution in our air and water, pollutants that can cause a range of health issues from smog-causing asthma attacks to toxic mercury harming children's neurological development. As a mother, I agree with the need for updated clean air standards. These new safeguards against air toxins will protect public health, save lives, and prevent disease. Most importantly to me, clean air will help protect my children and yours. Today, as a mother, I am encouraging the EPA to move forward and enact newer and stronger clean air standards to reduce harmful pollutants from our environment for the health of mothers and children everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
My name is Judy Facoretta. I'm a maternal child nurse, and I'm speaking as an advocate, a nurse advocate for healthcare without harm. I believe that clean air and pure water are inherent rights. Florence Nightingale was keenly aware of the environment's influence on health, and she strongly advocated for fresh air as a preventive and curative for illness. Modern medicine also recognizes not only the advantages of clean air, but the links between air pollution and disease as well. The science linking air pollution to diseases from asthma to developmental problems is voluminous. But you don't have to be a medical professional to make these connections. It simply makes sense that breathing contaminated air will produce harm. In our clinical practice, both physicians and nurses counsel childbearing families about the harmful effects of mercury on the developing baby. And how is the baby exposed to mercury? Simply put, coal-fired power plants release a form of mercury into the air, which falls into our waterways and is converted into methylmercury, which is a potent neurotoxin. A neurotoxin can disrupt normal brain and nervous system development. Methylmercury contaminates the fish in the waterways, and when this fish is eaten by pregnant moms or small children, they may be exposed to levels of mercury above what are considered safe levels. In a report released in 2004, the CDC estimated that 8% of American women of childbearing age are exposed to mercury at levels above the EPA's reference dose that is deemed safe for a human fetus. And EPA's own analysis of the data suggests that as many as 630,000 babies born each year are exposed to unsafe levels of mercury. The real tragedy is that fish, with its high levels of omega-3 fatty acids, is essential for normal brain development. And many women of childbearing age who are struggling to make ends meet, as we've heard in previous testimony, rely on inexpensive types of fish, such as tuna, to provide needed protein in their diets. The EPA recently released guidelines for moms and their children about how much fish was considered safe for them to include in their diets. So professionals who counsel families and families themselves are caught between advice about the health benefits of fish and the harmful effects of eating fish laden with mercury. In 2004, the March of Dimes asked the EPA to consider stronger regulations around mercury releases into the air. In 2011, the EPA is listening. Proposals of new standards to decrease mercury and other toxic air pollutants from power plants were released in March, and the new rule would reduce mercury from power plants by 91%. In doing so, they also follow the tenets laid out in the Declaration of Rights of the Pennsylvania Constitution, which was a model for the Bill of Rights of the United States Constitution. Those rights and prohibitions are set forth in the 28 sections of the Declaration. In particular, we refer them to Article 1, Section 27, which states, "The people have a right to clean air, pure water, and the preservation of the natural, scenic, historic, and aesthetic values of the environment, including generations to come." So in conclusion, as a registered nurse who counsels childbearing families, I would fully support the proposed EPA guidelines. And I'd like to end with a quote from Sandra Steingraber, that noted biologist and mother who we just heard about. She was pregnant when she wrote a book about her pregnancy experience from an environmental health perspective. And she was writing about the aspects of amniotic fluid, which is the fluid that surrounds the baby. And she stated, "When I hold in my hands a tube of my own amniotic fluid, I'm holding a tube full of raindrops. It's the juice of the orange that I had for breakfast. When I look at amniotic fluid, I'm looking at the rain falling on orange groves. Whatever is in the world's water is here in my hands."
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We now have Sarah Landini, who is a member of the Pittsburgh City Council, and John Elwood from the Evangelical Environmental Network. Welcome, Ms. Landini.
Just a correction, I'm not actually a member of the Pittsburgh City Council, but I've just been elected to read this for you from them.
Okay, so, fair enough, thank you.
Pittsburgh City Council Proclamation. Whereas coal-fired power plants emit air toxics and heavy metals, including mercury, arsenic, lead, dioxin, and acid gases, and whereas mercury is a harmful neurotoxin that can build up in women of childbearing age and can cause developmental disorders, and learning disabilities in children and fetuses. And whereas EPA studies show that at least 1 in 12 and as many as 1 in 6 American women of childbearing age have enough mercury in their bodies to put a fetus at risk. And whereas the Federal Environmental Protection Agency has proposed new standards for mercury and air toxics, which would update provisions in the Clean Air Act and establish emission limits for coal-fired power plants in the United States. And whereas these new protections will save as many as 17,000 lives and prevent 120,000 cases of childhood asthma. And whereas the Sierra Club is educating people about this issue by offering free mercury testing. And whereas Sierra Club volunteers and others will travel to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on May 24th to attend one of three public hearings on this matter being held by the EPA to submit their official support for this proposal. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this Council of the City of Pittsburgh does hereby recognize and commend the Sierra Club for their ongoing advocacy for clean air and public health. And be it further resolved that the Council of the City of Pittsburgh does hereby support the EPA's proposed emission standards for mercury and other air toxics. Sponsored by Councilwoman Natalia Rudiak, co-sponsored by Council President Darlene Harris, and Council Members Reverend Ricky Burgess, Patrick Dowd, Bruce Krause, Daniel Lavelle, William Peduto, Douglas Shields, and Teresa Kale Smith.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is John Elwood. I'm speaking to you today as a citizen of the state of New Jersey and as a board member of the Evangelical Environmental Network.
Could I ask you to bring the mic a little bit closer to you, please?
Yes.
Great, thanks.
Again, as I said, I'm speaking on behalf of the Evangelical Environmental Network. We are an organization of Christians who advocate care for God's creation. I live in Andover, New Jersey, where I also operate a sustainable produce farm. Andover is located in northwest New Jersey near the Pennsylvania border. In New Jersey, we have made great strides in reducing mercury contamination. Since 1992, our state has reduced its mercury emissions by more than two-thirds, from more than 9,000 pounds of mercury per year to about 3,000 pounds in 2006. And the goal for 2011 is a reduction of 85% below the 1992 levels. This result has been achieved by across-the-board improvements, including improved incineration of municipal and medical waste, iron and steel manufacturing improvements, and coal-fired utility generation improvements, among many, many others. The greatest impact has come from implementing proven, mature emission technologies. As an example of New Jersey's success, our state's largest steel mill has reduced mercury emissions from 900 pounds in 2005 to only 30 pounds in 2009. And our municipal waste incinerators now emit 97% less mercury than they did in 1990. And yet, despite these accomplishments, the Archives of Environmental Health have reported that in New Jersey, 13% of pregnant women, 1 out of 8, have mercury levels considered unsafe for childbearing. And in further defiance of our state's progress, the New Jersey DEP has analyzed mercury concentrations in fish and found no apparent trend, unquote, in mercury concentrations as recently as 2006. In the words of DEP scientist Michael Alcott, quote, mercury is a metal that just won't go away. But New Jersey's mercury problem is not ours alone. We share a 190-mile border with Pennsylvania. And while our coal-fired power plants emit only 284 pounds of mercury per year, Pennsylvania's plants emit 15,550 pounds, 55 times more than our state. Not surprisingly, our neighbor's mercury emissions are not regulated. In 2009, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court upheld a ruling which overturned the state's attempt to reduce mercury emissions, presumably because the EPA was supposed to be carrying out this function itself. In New Jersey, we live downwind of the country's worst mercury-polluting state, unable to do anything out about it, because the courts have found that only the EPA can come to our aid. Now, my family has a poignant reminder of this on a weekly basis. Every Sunday, I take them to our church in the town of Knowlton. Directly across the Delaware River from Knowlton is the Portland Power Plant in Mount Bethel, Pennsylvania. The Portland plant uses few, if any, smokestack emission controls, and the prevailing winds carry its coal pollutants across the river and into New Jersey. The plant emits 369 pounds of mercury per year. Compare that from only one plant to the 284 pounds emitted by all of New Jersey's power plants combined. In the words of New Jersey's top environmental officer, it is unacceptable to have a single power plant on our border emitting more sulfur dioxide and mercury than all of New Jersey's coal, oil, and gas-fired power plants combined. Now, 18 months ago, my daughter, Lindsay Burns, who's seated here in the front, brought to us the wonderful news that she was pregnant with our first grandchild. She was determined to make every effort to protect her child from mercury, so she religiously avoided all but the freshest, safest fish, and that very sparingly. Happily, she gave birth to a healthy baby girl. We have brought her with us today, Clara Mae Burns. But on the day Clara was born, and every day in New Jersey, one out of every eight babies is born from mothers bearing unsafe levels of mercury, and that mercury remains unregulated in many places. Today, we would ask you to remember the thousands of other children in our country who are just like this beautiful girl, Clara, except for unregulated mercury poisoning. Thank you.
And thanks to both of you for your testimony.